Oh, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. It's a relief for everybody except Alexa Bliss, who unfortunately could not get her Alka-Seltzer tablet to fully dissolve in her mouth with the post-match angle they did tonight after her loss to Charlotte Flair when she was absolutely losing her mind and pitching a fit. And she was pulling her hair out and she was going nuts and she was foaming at the mouth like a rabid squirrel. Yeah, it's kind of funny that she would put an Alka-Seltzer in her mouth, a tablet, which is usually for indigestion. That whole storyline gives me indigestion, so it's kind of appropriate. But that's not why I'm laughing. That's we talk about the main event. And it's such a shame because I actually was enjoying the match up until the finish. I thought that these two were having, you know, a pretty standard WWE style extreme rules match. Nothing really overly extreme about it, but, you know, they were having a fine match. And then they do that finish, and all I can say is the demon is dead. We knew the demon was not going to win the championship. We knew you people are smart. You wouldn't be tuned in right now to this stream if you weren't smart. Your people are intelligent. You have functioning brains. You knew that Roman Reigns was not losing the championship before he went to Saudi Arabia to defend against Brock Lesnar. So we knew they were going to have to come up with some kind of finish, either to protect the demon or even just in defeat, make him go down in a blaze of glory. That's not what they did. He went down all right. Oh, he went down at the end of this pay-per-view. He didn't go down in a blaze of glory, but he went down. The demon is dead. In one of the worst pay-per-view finishes of the year, I was, before I went live here, struggling to decide if this finish was worse than the finish to the Revolution match between Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega, the exploding barbed wire death match, where they had a little explosion that went poof. I'm trying to debate if that was worse than this. It might be. For me, it's neck and neck as far as which finish was more embarrassing. I might give the edge to AEW on that one. But it's close. It's very, very close. We had Finn Balor in his demon paint. I know he's the demon because Michael Cole and Pat McAfee wouldn't shut up about it at the end of the show. Every 5 seconds, the demon this, the demon that, the demon Kane. I understand that he's the demon. Do we really need to call him the demon every 5 seconds? So I'm well aware that he was the demon. We had Finn Balor in his demon paint, making a big comeback at the very end here where the arena went dark and all of a sudden the red light came on and his music came on. He's got a friend in the production truck. His music came on. He came back to his feet. He got back to life. And it looked like nothing was going to stop. Nothing was going to stop the demon. I'm going to try to do this with a straight face. I swear to God, nothing can stop the demon. He rose to his feet. He no-sold the attack on him. He gave him the John Woo dropkick, and Roman Reigns went flying, and he landed on top of a table. He went through a table that was set up at ringside. He put him back in the ring, and the demon climbs up to the top rope, and there's smoke. And you know what I honestly thought at first as I was watching this? I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, because he's taking forever. I'm like, just jump already. Just jump. You know, it's like some guy who like a stockbroker who's standing on the ledge of a building. He's ready to end it all. After a while, it's like, just fucking jump already. And he's up there, but there's so much smoke from the smoke machine that I'm thinking to myself, maybe he can't see. There's so much smoke, his vision is obscured. He can't see below. So he's like just standing there. And then all of a sudden, the top rope breaks. The top rope snaps, and the demon falls, and he falls flat on his face. And all of a sudden, the lights come back on, and the music stops. You know what it's like if you watch a movie, and somebody is having, like, they're daydreaming, or it's like some kind of dream sequence, and somebody is imagining something really great. Like, there's the there's this girl that this guy is really into, and the girl is, like, racing towards him, right? And he's, like, he's in this fog. He's in this dream. But then reality kicks him in the nuts, right? Because it's not some, you know, hot girl that he's into who's coming to, like, run into his arms. It's like some little old lady who's, like, standing there going, get the fuck out of the way, like, hitting him with his purse in the head or something, you know? Something like that. He hits that mat, the music stops, the lights come back on. It's like reality sets in. He wakes up from his dream. The demon has no idea where he is. He gets up, he gets speared, and Roman Reigns pins him and wins, and he retains the Universal Championship. And that is how the demon came to an end. That was the end of the demon. At least for me, it was. I will never be able to look at the demon the same way after this. Finn Balor broke the top rope. It broke under the massive weight of his 180-pound frame. It could not hold all of his girth, all of his weight, and he crashed to the mat. And Roman Reigns will go to day number 392, I believe it is, as the Universal Champion. So let us all remember the demon. Everybody, if you've got a drink or whatever, I got water here. I want you to hold up your drink. If you got a bottle of something, pour one out for the demon. I want you all to remember the demon, not for who he is, not for who he was tonight, but for who he used to be. That is how I want you to remember the demon, who suffered his first loss on the main roster here tonight. May the demon rest in hell. Because I will never be able to look at him with the paint the same way ever again. I think the demon needs to lose some weight. Fucking rope is snapping. He's got to up the cardio. Tonight, WWE presented Not So Extreme Rule. I'm calling this show Not So Extreme Rules. There was absolutely nothing extreme about this show, except that finish. That was an extremely funny finish. I was entertained. I was entertained by it. I was entertained by it in the absolute worst way possible, but it put a smile on my face. There was nothing extreme about this show. And it really is a shame, because even though the title of this show did not do it any favors, this show should have been called anything other than Extreme Rules. Literally anything else. Great Balls of Fire. Call it whatever you want. This pay-per-view does not need to exist. Tonight was a great example of that. There was one stipulation match on the entire show. It was the main event. And I think by now we've seen so many of these matches, there really is nothing extreme about these Extreme Rules matches. You pull out a couple of kendo sticks, you pull out a table, you pull out a chair. We see that on television almost every week. So this did not need to be Extreme Rules. I would like to see them, frankly, do away with this going forward. But it's a shame, and the reason I say it's a shame is because I thought the wrestling, for the most part, was really good on this show. And it was the wrestling and the in-ring action that really carried this pay-per-view. And I already see some of the poll results and everything, and it's a shame because I think this show, I'm actually going to stand up a little bit for the show because I think the work was really solid. A lot of the matches, I really can't think of a bad match. I could think of some bad match finishes, but the work was really good on this show. And it's going to be completely overshadowed by some of the nonsense that we saw. Some people just thought the show was flat out boring, but the work in the ring was strong. When you have a show called Extreme Rules, though, people aren't thinking about it in terms of, oh, who's going to have the best technical match? And so by that measure, you could say the show really, maybe it didn't deliver what people's expectations were. I had very low expectations coming into this show. I knew some of the matches were going to be good. The triple threat for the U.S. title, the main event, the way it opened, tag team match. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff on the show in terms of the in-ring stuff. But it will be completely overshadowed by everything else. I also want to mention one other thing that some of you may not be aware of. If you are a YouTube TV subscriber, as I am, I have YouTube TV. I'm a big fan of YouTube TV. There is a fight brewing, and this could have an impact on wrestling. Hold on one second. We're back. I had to take care of a little issue. We had a giant roach that jumped on my chair. I could feel it behind me. I think the demon sent him. Anyway, he's been dispatched. What I was going to talk about here is this whole YouTube TV situation that I wasn't aware of until tonight. I had no idea that there is a battle brewing between NBC Universal and YouTube TV. And it was serious enough that during the football game tonight, I got a text message from my friend saying, hey, there's a scroll. There is a scroll that they're showing on screen during the game that is talking about how as of September 30th, which is this Thursday coming up, if they don't reach an agreement, all of the NBC channels, including the main NBC channel and including USA Network, which airs Raw and NXT, will be off the service. YouTube is saying that we'll take $10 off your bill until this issue is resolved, if it comes to that. Well, obviously for me, that would be a bit of an issue if I didn't have USA Network. So if you are a YouTube TV subscriber, just be aware that as of later this week, you may lose USA Network and NBC and all of the channels, and there's a whole bunch of them, that fall under that whole umbrella. So hopefully they can get their shit together. This is, it's always the customers who get fucked in these situations, unfortunately. Oh, by the way, Asuka, her birthday, 40 years old. Happy birthday to Asuka. I think it's today. And I think she's healing up from some kind of a wrist injury or a hand injury. So happy birthday to Asuka. But again, super chats are open. I will be reading your messages here a little bit later on. They're going to be popping up on screen. I thank you all in advance for your support. And I thank you for choosing me for your coverage tonight. I do want to get your feedback on tonight's pay-per-view. So send those messages on in. And I want to welcome our newest channel members to the Sound Off family here on YouTube. Sohail, Liam, Angel, and Rooster Loving Man. My newest favorite member, Rooster Loving Man. So welcome to the family and thank you for becoming a member. Yeah, you know, people in the chat can't believe it. 40 years old, this woman has turned back the hands of time. She found her way to the Fountain of Youth. She looks great. She looks great, but she is 40 years old. I don't know when she'll be back in action. Hopefully soon. Because Raw or SmackDown could use her. We'll see maybe if she'll move in the draft. But anyway, during the kickoff show, Sarah Schreiber was in the back waiting to speak with the New Day when AJ Styles and Omos walked over. New Day pointed out that Styles and Omos do not have a match tonight. All of a sudden, Big E is jumped by the former WWE champion, Bobby Lashley. And a big brawl breaks out, and they made it official for the pay-per-view. So at the very last minute, before they went on the air tonight, they added a six-man tag team match to open the show, which was all three members of New Day taking on Bobby Lashley, AJ Styles, and Omos. How nice of them to add the WWE champion and the former WWE champion to the pay-per-view just minutes before the show. Completely unannounced. They just happened to be there. I guess they were just hanging out for the show in case they were needed, and a big brawl broke out, and all of a sudden we had a match. The kickoff match was Liv Morgan taking on Carmella. Now, I was laughing before about the end of the pay-per-view and all this stuff, and we're gonna talk about all of it here. But on Peacock, and I have documented the issues that I have had with Peacock for a lot of these WWE pay-per-view streams. There have been multiple issues with Peacock for months. These pay-per-views have been airing on Peacock since WrestleMania. So it's been a while, and they're still having issues. Now, they're not serious issues that prevent me from watching the entire show, but these are issues that shouldn't be happening. Tonight, the issue had to do with the audio, and thankfully it was resolved by the first match once the main card started. But all throughout the match on the kickoff show, it was Liv Morgan against Carmella, the English and the Spanish feeds were mixed together. So we could hear the English announcers and we could hear the Spanish announcers at the same time. As if I don't rant enough about the need for there not to be four announcers on Rampage on AEW television every Friday. Now we had four announcers in my ear, two speaking English and two speaking Spanish. So yeah, that was a little distracting. And I had no idea what they were saying, but I will say the Spanish announcers sounded far more excited than the English announcers did. But they had a good match, which I really, again, I think that was really the story of the night. I could say that about almost every match on the card. They had a good match. They had a good match. Oh, they had a very good match. You know, that's why I'm very hesitant. I can't sit here and tell you that this is the worst show of the year, because it wasn't. The action was solid. I don't want to hold it against the talent who went out there and had some really good matches tonight because of some, you know, dumb decisions that were made on other parts of the card. And frankly, it wasn't even just dumb decisions. I've seen far worse booking decisions made by WWE. But for a lot of the show tonight, it just didn't feel like it was of any consequence. And maybe that's a product of being in the TV era now, where everything is about TV and TV rights. And, you know, TV is going to be the priority because that's where they make their money. We know the pay-per-views aren't as special as they used to be because the pay-per-views are $5 now. They're $5 a month. But even still, these television shows build to the pay-per-view. So when you get to an Extreme Rules, when you get to a Survivor Series or a Royal Rumble or whatever it may be, you expect that you're going to get something more than what you would normally get on TV. And you're going to get something special. This didn't feel special. That maybe is my biggest knock on the show tonight. If you missed Extreme Rules tonight and you just tuned into Raw tomorrow night, you didn't miss anything. You could have completely skipped this show and it would have been totally missable. You never want your pay-per-views to be totally missable. But Liv Morgan and Carmella had a very good match. Carmella had the upper hand. All of a sudden, Stone Cold Liv Morgan came back with a Thez press. She followed that with an enziguri and a stomp for a two count. Carmella hit a super kick for a near fall. And she dragged Liv Morgan to the floor. Liv fought back, dropped Carmella face first on the announce desk. Back inside, Morgan hit her springboard pay dirt finish, which she calls the Oblivion, for the win, and the fans popped big when she got the pin. These fans were really into Liv Morgan. They really wanted to see her pick up the W, and she did. And she made the most of the time that she was given. Now, is it going to manifest itself in any kind of a push on TV? Are they going to start to slowly, you know, push her to a championship match at some point? I would hope so. But I don't know. She lost to Zelina Vega on TV 48 hours ago. Zelina Vega, the woman who hadn't won anything since she came back. She didn't win a fucking thing since coming back to WWE. Beat Liv Morgan, who had a pay-per-view match coming up. She beat her on TV this week. I can only hope that we get a rematch on TV this week with Liv getting her win back. Otherwise, what the hell was the point of that? Thankfully, they had fixed the audio issue, as I mentioned, but then it came back again. Just in time for the pay-per-view portion of tonight to begin. And it opened with the New Day against Bobby Lashley, AJ Styles, and Omos. Now, so before it was Spanish, now we had the French. We went from Spain to France. We had the French announcers now, who were mixed in with the English announcers. I may have to brush up on my fucking Rosetta Stone going forward if this is the way it's going to be on these Peacock shows so I can understand what they're talking about. Wee-wee. Thankfully, they did fix it. Finally, they fixed it. We also had a nice Daphne sign. I saw somebody holding up a Daphne sign in the front row, or one of the front rows, at the beginning of this match, which I thought was very cool. Right there on the hard camera. Lakers Pat's in the chat says, show us the roach. The roach right now, just so you know, is it's sitting under a garbage can, which I just lifted up and pretty much just smashed on top of it. If you know anything about these palmetto bugs, these water bugs, it ain't dead. I'm almost positive it's alive under there, but I had a fucking stream to do. So it's sitting over there right now waiting for me. I ain't looking forward to going back over there. But we got business to transact here. We got a pay-per-view to recap here. I got work to do. Big E was not happy. Clearly not happy about being attacked earlier, jumped backstage. He flattened AJ early in this match. And then he tossed him into the heel corner so that he could tag Lashley. He wanted the big man. He wanted Bobby Lashley in this match. And so Lashley tagged in. They went at it for a bit. Kofi tagged in. Lashley tossed him halfway across the ring like he was nothing. He just threw him like a small child, like a little baby. Threw him across the ring. And then he tagged in the big man. Now, Lashley himself is a very big man. But Lashley is not the big man. The big man is Omos. He's a big dude. And he came in and he worked Kingston over for a few minutes. You know, they limit what he does because he can't do much. He does very basic stuff. He doesn't have to do more than that. I don't want to see Omos doing a dive. I don't want to see Omos trying to do a poison Rana. Okay, we don't need to see any of that. What he does is basic big man offense that you would expect from a guy who's 7'2" or whatever he is. He did his stuff. He tagged out of the match. So we get Omos in small doses. Kofi tried to tag out. His partners, though, had gotten taken out. They got knocked off the apron, so he had nobody to tag. Lashley took over again. He went for a power slam, but Kofi slipped out. Eventually, he finally did make the tag to Xavier Woods. And he ran wild. Lashley fought back, hit a power slam. Woods came back with a missile drop kick and tagged in Big E, and the crowd was hot. For the Big E to tag into this match, he threw AJ around with a couple of belly-to-belly suplexes. He had a big running splash. He went for the big ending. AJ avoided it. And Styles... Now, this was weird because the spot was... And we've seen Big E, we've seen Samoa Joe in a lot of his matches do this spot before where somebody comes charging into the corner. And in this case, it's Big E. We'll catch them in position for a rock bottom, right? A Uranage, and he'll slam him down. Well, AJ came in like a bat out of hell. And he came in with a lot of momentum. And it looked like Big E, his arm went all the way back. And my first fear is, all right, that's how you tear a pec. You know, he's going to tear something. Paul Hamilton. I saw that. Solid Monster Belt Super Chat dropping $150 here on the stream. Paul, you are the man. I just shouted you out earlier on the podcast. Paul, I hope you're having a good night, man. And thank you. Thank you for that generous super chat. That is awesome. You are a number one so far for tonight. I don't think anybody's beaten you. So thank you. But anyway, so it looked like he might tear something. Thankfully, he kind of paused for a second and he walked AJ into the middle of the ring and then he gave him a Uranage. So that was a little scary because it doesn't take much. You know, you over hyperextend your arm, your leg, your knee or something. You could tear something. So that was a little scary there for a second. Big E went for the spear through the rope. Styles countered with a jumping leg drop. So he was able to avoid Big E's suicide spear, which is what it is. Big E got AJ up in a powerbomb position. Kofi went up top. And he came off with a double stomp. So down goes AJ Styles. Lashley breaks up the pin. And we skip ahead here. I'm going to skip ahead to the finish, which is really all that matters here. Lashley is setting up for the Hurt Lock. And AJ blind tags himself in, which Bobby was not happy about initially, but then he got out of the ring. As AJ is setting up for the Phenomenal Forearm, Lashley blind tags himself back in midair, in mid-move, as AJ is propelling himself up. Lashley tags himself in. And Styles flies into the ring, doesn't hit the move. Lashley gets into the ring. And Lashley accidentally spears AJ. He was going to spear Big E, but he speared AJ by accident. And when he turned around, he got lifted up into the position for the big ending. Big E dropped him, and he pinned him 1-2-3 to win the match for the New Day. So the WWE champion got the win for his team. I thought it was a great opener. It was all action. I thought this was a lot of fun, even though I think it's completely ridiculous that they didn't have anything for the WWE champion to do or a singles match of some kind on this show. And look, if you're going to do a tag team match, that's fine too. But, you know, the fact that they didn't even announce anything in advance. You know, Big E is supposed to be a big deal now. That's the problem. Big E has to be treated now like a big deal. When we saw Big E on the last pay-per-view, that was SummerSlam, right? He wasn't on SummerSlam. He was on the kickoff show. Big E went from the kickoff show at SummerSlam to the opener here on this pay-per-view. Perception is reality. And if Big E is the WWE champion now, he should be treated accordingly. He should be treated like a big deal. At the very least, you should announce his match 6 days beforehand on Raw and let people know that he's going to be wrestling at Extreme Rules and who he's going to be in the ring against. So they're going to have to start treating him like a top guy. They wouldn't put Roman Reigns on the show 20 minutes before they go on the air for the pay-per-view. They wouldn't do that. I don't think they would do that with anybody. They wouldn't do that with Drew McIntyre. And they wouldn't do it with Roman Reigns. They should not do it with Big E. If Big E is going to be the champion, he should be treated accordingly. And doing stuff like that does not help his cause. But he had a great showing here in this match. The only thing I did not like was the fact that Lashley was the one to eat the pin here. I didn't like that. I would have rather have been AJ Styles. AJ doesn't lose anything from eating the pin, especially if he got accidentally speared by Bobby Lashley. Then he's got a built-in excuse as to why he got pinned. Why did it have to be Lashley? Lashley could have been equally upset even if he wasn't the one to eat the pin. His team lost. So he still could have been pissed off when it was over. That's the only thing I didn't really like. Later on backstage, Lashley called Big E a chicken shit. He was furious, not just about losing tonight, but losing his championship and the way that he lost it off of Money in the Bank cash-in. He felt that was very unfair. And he challenged Big E to a match on Raw tomorrow night. Don't be a chicken shit. Show up. Give me my shot. I want my belt back. And he challenged him to a WWE title match on Raw tomorrow night. A lot of fire in this promo. Angry Bobby Lashley. That's the Bobby Lashley I like to see. When he's all fired up like that, he looks like a fucking beast. You wouldn't want to fuck with this guy. You wouldn't want to run into him in a dark alley or a light, or a lighted one. That's the Bobby Lashley I like. Now, later on, Big E had a segment of his own. He accepted the challenge. It is now official. He will defend the WWE title on Raw, 8 p.m. sharp, right when the show goes on the air. So at the beginning of the show tomorrow night, I guess they're trying to get the jump on Monday Night Football, I guess. They're going to be giving away a WWE Championship match between them on Raw tomorrow night. And I have to assume that Bobby Lashley is once again going to eat the pin. He's going to lose again. Bobby Lashley has lost 3 matches in a row. He lost his title to Big E. He lost in the Triple Threat match, which was another great match, on Raw last week. Right? He got pinned. And he got pinned here in this match. And he's probably going to get pinned again on TV tomorrow night. That's the one thing I don't like. I think Bobby Lashley, unless he's moving to SmackDown, I'm not sure that, honestly, is a great idea either, if he moves to SmackDown. I'd probably keep him on Raw. We had the Usos defending the SmackDown Tag Team Championship against the Street Profits. Montez Ford had his ribs all taped up after being assaulted on TV Friday night by Roman Reigns. He was assaulted with a steel chair. He was put through a table. He was rock bottom by Roman Reigns through a table on the outside of the ring. So he was selling a rib injury. Michael Cole was teasing that the Street Profits could potentially be split up in the draft. Oh, you know, hey, it's the WWE draft. So anything is possible. Teams can be split up. I just talked about this possibility on the podcast earlier today when I was running down my not my picks, but some of the moves that I would make in the draft coming up this week. I kind of threw that out there, and I said, you know, that match with him against Roman Reigns on TV Friday night could have been something of a test for a Montez Ford singles run. Because Montez Ford has a bright future, eventually, as a singles star. I cannot say the same about Angelo Dawkins. Angelo Dawkins is good, but I don't see him having the same success that Montez Ford is going to have. So here they were kind of floating the idea that, oh, maybe the Street Profits will be split up in the draft. And, you know, God knows they've split up tag teams before. We've seen that plenty of times. Hopefully the fact that he said that means that it won't happen. Because if it does, Dawkins is doomed. If I'm Angelo Dawkins, I don't want to be hearing this. Because it ain't going to end well for me. But for me in this match, you know, there was no real drama about the finish, because I knew the Usos were not going to lose the tag team titles. You know, they got a good thing going with the Bloodline stuff. It would be premature for any of them to lose their championships. So I already knew what the finish was going to be. For me, that took away a lot of the drama of the match. They had a very good match, and the crowd did buy into some of the false finishes, which I think is a testament to these two being very good at what they do. Usos were targeting Montez Ford's ribs. He was trying to make the tag. Jey Uso pulled him back in and wouldn't let him tag out. Jey missed a splash. Dawkins did get the hot tag, and he hit a flying elbow on Jey, twisting splashes in the corner to both Usos. And Jimmy recovered and sent Dawkins to the floor. So Jimmy attempted a suicide dive out of the ring. Dawkins caught him, hit a suplex. Jey then attempted a suicide dive, and he got caught, not caught, he got cut off by Dawkins. As he was coming through the ropes, he caught him with a right hand. So the Prophets then hit a doomsday blockbuster for a close two count. Jey hit a splash on Angelo Dawkins. Montez Ford made a blind tag. And Dawkins came back with a spine buster. Ford went up for the big frog splash. But on his way down, Jey Uso got the knees up right on the injured ribs of Montez Ford. Jey nailed Dawkins with a super kick. And Jimmy hit a splash for a near fall. So the Usos dragged Dawkins to the floor. And they threw him into the barricade. And Montez Ford then hit this huge flip dive out over the ring post, out onto both Usos. And the crowd came alive. That brought them to a whole other level in this match. And now the people were really into this. And they were really amped up now and really behind the Street Profits. He followed that up with a frog splash for a close near fall, but he couldn't capitalize. So he didn't immediately crawl over and go for the pin because he was selling the ribs. So there was a few seconds that went by before he attempted to cover. And Jimmy broke up the pin. Usos hit stereo super kicks on Montez Ford. They followed that up with stereo splashes off the top rope to retain the tag team titles. The Bloodline, as I said, were not losing their gold here on this show. I think most of us pretty much knew that. But damn, if these four guys didn't put on a show here... My hat's off. I'm not even wearing a hat, but if I were, I would take it off to those four guys. I thought this was a very good match. Very fun match. Tell you what was not great, what came at the end of this match. Charlotte Flair defending the Raw Women's Championship against Alexa Bliss, the hometown girl from Columbus, Ohio. Got a big hometown ovation here. She was the big baby face in this match because she is from Columbus. Charlotte was wearing black and gold gear. She had one boot that was gold. She had another boot that was black. So I thought that was kind of unique. Actually, when she came out, and I saw some people mention this, like the collar of what she was wearing. At first, I thought she was wearing something that she looked like the demon. And now people are going to get on me. Oh, you called Charlotte a demon. But it kind of looked like some of the paint that Balor wears. But Balor has also worn Venom paint before. So I don't know if she was intentionally doing sort of a tribute to Venom. There's a new Venom movie coming out soon. But anyway, she had one black boot and one gold boot. And Bliss sent her out to the floor early, and she hit a cannonball off the apron. Charlotte hit a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, took control for a little bit, but Bliss turned things around with a Hurricane Rana into the bottom turnbuckle. Charlotte, like, her head kind of clipped the bottom turnbuckle. Alexa sent Flair to the floor with a drop kick and went for a sliding drop kick through the ropes, but Charlotte caught her, grabbed her by the legs, and swung her. She swung Alexa Bliss headfirst into the barricade, and I just thought to myself, I don't think that's a really smart thing to be doing to Alexa Bliss. Here's a woman who's had concussion issues before. This woman is a tiny woman. She's fragile. I don't know that I would be taking a chance by smacking her into the barricade like that. Charlotte went up for the moonsault. Bliss rolled out of the way, and Charlotte did the Andrade spot, where she landed on her feet, and then she hit a standing moonsault instead. And got a close near fall out of it. Alexa avoided natural selection, and she hit a great-looking code red. That was a great-looking code red that Alexa hit on Charlotte for a very close near fall, the best of the entire match. Charlotte avoided Twisted Bliss when Bliss came off the top, but Alexa came back and hit a DDT. She spiked her head first right into the mat. Flair got her feet on the bottom rope. And then Charlotte grabbed the doll. Lily was in the corner. Lily was watching. She had a front row seat. And Charlotte grabs the doll, and she throws it in Alexa Bliss's face. So this obviously briefly distracts Alexa. Charlotte then boots her right in the face, and then follows that up with natural selection for the win. So Charlotte wins via doll. She retains her championship. After the match, Charlotte threw Alexa out of the ring, and she took Lily and she tore the doll to shreds. She ripped the stuffing out of this doll. She ripped it in half, and she's throwing pieces of her, you know, she's just destroying this thing. She's absolutely destroying this thing. She's disemboweling the doll here on TV. It's not very PG. To me, it made her the biggest baby face in the entire company. I'm like, thank God, somebody killed the fucking doll. Thank you, Charlotte. She became the biggest baby face on this show. Death to the doll. Once Alexa saw what she had done, she snapped and she tackled Charlotte out on the floor. Charlotte came back and threw her. She just tossed this girl over the announce desk. And then Alexa kind of landed underneath the announce desk. And then she was fumbling around with something. Camera kind of caught her there for a second. She was doing something under the announce desk. We couldn't really see what it was, although we would find out momentarily what it was. It looked like she was putting something in her mouth. So she gets up, eventually, she gets out from under the table, she kind of peeks her head up and she's looking into the ring, and she sees the remnants of the dead doll. All the little doll parts and the stuffing and everything is all over the ring. And Alexa Bliss proceeds to have this over-exaggerated breakdown. She has a complete and total breakdown. By the announce desk, as she is gazing into the ring at what she is seeing, she starts screaming. She gets into the ring, she cradles what's left of the doll like a baby, like a child in her hand. And the crowd started a thank you, Lily chant. That's the chant they started. Thank you, Lily. You should be thanking Charlotte for killing Lily. They started a thank you, Lily chant. They were being very sarcastic while Alexa Bliss cried her eyes out. Makeup is just leaking and dripping down her face. You know, somebody ought to remind her that WWE.com, WWEshop.com, is stocked with tons of Lily dolls. So I don't see what the big fucking deal is. Just go buy a doll. But then for the next, like, 3 or 4 minutes, like, if that would have been it, that still would have been pretty shitty. But for, like, 3 or 4 straight minutes, they lingered. The announcers laid out, and they lingered, and the camera just followed Alexa. She continued to weep and moan in the ring, and then they followed her down the aisleway. She continued to cry and moan and scream, and then she was pouting, and then she had like a really angry look on her face. And this just wouldn't end. All over a fucking doll. And this just went on and on and on, and all of a sudden she started foaming at the mouth, like she was having a seizure or something. Like she's got fucking rabies. But she had her mouth open, and you could see that in her mouth was this completely undissolved, what looked like an Alka-Seltzer tablet. When you have a stomach ache, or you have gas pains or cramps, and you would take something like Tums or Alka-Seltzer, that's what it looked like. That's probably what it was. But it didn't fully dissolve. So it looked completely ridiculous. Not her fault. She did what she was told to do, but unfortunately, this was the epitome of wrestle crap. And I say that that's too bad, because the match itself was better than I expected it to be. This match was better than I expected it to be coming into this show. Was not a bad match. Really wasn't. Yeah, with this gimmick and everything, I've seen Alexa Bliss have matches that were worse than this. So the actual match was not really terrible, but everything that came after it It was just completely embarrassing. It's just, there's no other word for it. And the whole foaming at the mouth thing with the tablet, I mean, that was unfortunate. But all of this to me was just embarrassing. This is not, clearly this is not for me. Maybe it's for you. Maybe it's for your daughter. If you have a little child who watches this stuff, this clearly was not for me. Because all of this was embarrassing. We had Damian Priest. This was a nice little palate cleanser here that came after this. That's right. See, people know what Alka-Seltzer is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Was that like a 30-year-old commercial, 30 or 40 years old now? I think I was like a baby when that commercial was airing on TV. Maybe I wasn't even born when that commercial started airing on TV. That commercial might go back to the 60s or the 70s. That's how far back that campaign goes. Damian Priest, Sheamus, and Jeff Hardy. Triple threat match for the United States Championship. I knew this was one of the matches I was most looking forward to coming into this show. So I actually had some reasonably high expectations for this coming into this here. Sheamus jumped Jeff Hardy at the bell. Now, Jeff Hardy was added late to this match, only 6 days ago. He beat Sheamus on TV. He earned a spot, making this a triple threat match. And I had figured that the reason for that was so that he could, you know, maybe eat the pin, or, you know, if Damian Priest was going to be traded to SmackDown and they didn't want him to take the U.S. title with him, maybe he would lose. And Jeff Hardy was put in the match to win. And then Damian Priest would go to SmackDown. But you know what? I'm glad they didn't do that, because Damian Priest, he's got a good thing going right now with the U.S. title. He is, you know, ascending nicely on that brand. And I think it would have been a mistake to take that championship away from him right now. So Sheamus jumped Hardy at the bell. Priest and Sheamus, they were brawling around ringside, and Hardy came back into the fray, big dive off the ring steps. Inside, Priest hit a Falcon Arrow on Jeff for a near fall. Hardy hit the Whisper in the Wind a little bit later on Sheamus and Priest for a near fall of his own. Sheamus hit the Alabama Slam on Jeff Hardy, and in doing so, his protective face mask went flying off his face. It fell off. Sheamus locked on the Cloverleaf. Priest broke it up. Hardy caught Sheamus with a Twist of Fate. Damian Priest went for the Reckoning. But unfortunately, there was a little bit of a botch here. And Hardy, he tried countering into a Twist of Fate. Now, I don't know if it was his fault or Priest or whoever's fault it was. They messed up the move. And he basically ended up with a Dragon Sleeper instead. There was a spot earlier in the match where Priest kind of slipped off the apron. So this was not the smoothest night at the office for Damian Priest. Hardy hit the Twist of Fate. He climbed up top. Sheamus knocked him off the ropes. And then he mocked him. Sheamus mocked Jeff Hardy by doing the Jeff Hardy poses. Because you know how Jeff Hardy, when he's on the ropes or whatever, when he makes his entrance, he's like, he's doing that. Now don't picture my dumbass doing it. Picture Sheamus and his pasty white ass up on the ropes doing the Jeff Hardy poses. He looked completely ridiculous, but I laughed my ass off. This right here may have been the highlight of the night for me, was watching Sheamus imitate Jeff Hardy on the ropes. Sheamus doesn't get enough credit. I know Sheamus has been around forever, and, you know, you kind of take him for granted, I think, in a way, but he really has been one of the MVPs of all of these television shows, even when he was on SmackDown, all throughout the pandemic era into the beginning of this year. The guy goes out there, he has very good matches. You know, he had one with Matt Riddle at WrestleMania this year, the matches with Drew McIntyre. You know, he used to have matches with Big E on SmackDown. Matches he's had recently with people on Raw for the U.S. title. But here he got to show off a little bit of his personality during the match, and I thought it was funny. So anyway, he followed through with a knee drop on Damian Priest for a near fall. Priest fought back. He went for a pin on Sheamus, but Hardy came off the top rope with the Swanton Bomb right across the back of Damian Priest. And I think the people in the building bought this as a possible finish. They thought that Jeff Hardy was going to win this championship, and they wanted him to win this championship. But Jeff couldn't follow up. Everybody was down. Jeff didn't go for the cover right away. He couldn't follow up in time. Priest went for a springboard off the middle rope. Sheamus rocked him with a knee. Hardy knocked Sheamus out of the ring. He got the nearest of near falls on Damian Priest. He tried to steal one, but Damian Priest kicked out. And again, everybody in the building thought he had stolen the win. And finally, Sheamus hit the bro kick to Hardy, and then Damian Priest rolled up Sheamus to retain the title. So they had a good match. I thought the match was very good, actually. These fans badly wanted to see Jeff Hardy walk out with the United States Championship. And it's what I was talking about on the podcast earlier today on episode 723 when I was talking about the draft. And I'll get that video clip up on the YouTube channel tomorrow. I pitched one of the moves as Jeff Hardy going from Raw to SmackDown. And the main reason I pitched that, first of all, there really, it feels like there's nothing else for him to do on Raw. There really isn't. I mean, as it is, a couple of weeks ago, he was part of the 24/7 jobber parade out to the ring, which should never happen ever again. Send Jeff Hardy to SmackDown. Start building him up a little bit. This could be the last big singles push of his career. Start building him up. Let him rack up some wins. Roman Reigns is going to need at least one, if not a couple of solid babyfaces to feud with between Survivor Series and WrestleMania. I don't know if the match of WrestleMania is going to be Brock Lesnar in a rematch. I don't know if it's going to be The Rock, if they feel they can get The Rock next year. The Rock may not be available next year, maybe the following year. But from December to March, they're going to need someone or some group of people for Roman Reigns to beat. And I think Jeff Hardy would be a great babyface for him to get in the ring with, because you saw it tonight here in Columbus, Ohio. They call... Remember Columbus, was it Columbus or where they were for the King of the Ring? Then Dayton, Ohio, right? Ohio, they call it the heartland of America. Well, if the heartland of America is any kind of measure for this company, they want to see Jeff Hardy become a champion. He still has a lot of loyal fans, loyal, dedicated fans out there who want to see him succeed and do something before he's ready to hang it up in the next few years. People would buy a Jeff Hardy Roman Reigns program for the Universal Championship. He wouldn't win, but I think him going to SmackDown and being an eventual challenger for Roman's belt is the way to go with him. And based on the crowd support that you saw tonight, I don't think the fans would have any issue getting behind Jeff Hardy in that feud. That's what I would do. We have Becky Lynch defending her SmackDown Women's Championship against Bianca Belair. We had dueling chants of Let's Go Becky EST. So a very split crowd reaction here at the beginning of this match. Bianca got over with her power spots. There was a delayed vertical suplex that Pat McAfee called the Davy Boy Delight. I like that. Another time she gorilla pressed Becky up into the air, but the champion escaped. And again, one of the many, many, many times in this match that Becky Lynch went for the disarmer, her finish. Bianca got her foot on the rope. Belair sent Becky to the floor and went for the... they're out on the floor now. And she gets Becky up into the air with a double arm chicken wing, where she usually face plants the person. But Becky countered and she sent Bianca face first into the ring steps instead. She followed that up with a leg drop off the middle turnbuckle for a near fall. Becky went back up, hit a second leg drop to Bianca, this time when Bianca was draped over the middle rope. Leg drop to the back of the head. Another near fall. So Becky goes for the manhandle slam. Bianca counters with a suplex. Becky rolls through, goes for the arm bar yet again. Belair counters into a power bomb. They trade some shots. They trade some pin attempts back and forth. And Becky rolls through, goes for the disarmer again. But Bianca powered out of it. So now Bianca has Becky Lynch up on her shoulders for the KOD. She is going for the kiss of death, which is her finish. Seemingly has victory in hand when all of a sudden, who should run down? Well, you would know if you listened to the podcast earlier today. I just talked about this when I did my predictions. Here comes the boss. Vince McMahon. No, not Vince McMahon. Sasha Banks, the real boss. Sasha Banks comes running down to the ring. She makes a beeline for Bianca Belair, and the referee calls for the bell. And Bianca gets the win via disqualification off the interference. of Sasha Banks. Exactly as I called it on the podcast earlier today. It just felt like the right time. I didn't know what her medical status was. I still don't know why she was pulled from SummerSlam. That is still a mystery as far as what that was all about. We may never find out. That might be a personal thing. That's up to her if she wants to reveal that. But I just figured unless she's fucking dying or something, it's probably about time for her to come back. Now, maybe they're saving her for the draft shows, but I figure she's coming out here on this show, and she's going to cost Bianca the title. She doesn't want Bianca Belair to win the championship back. And sure enough, she came out and she cost Bianca the title, exactly the way I figured it would be. After the match, Sasha attacked Bianca. She was brawling with her, and she also got into it with Becky Lynch, who went over to give her a thumbs up, a very cautionary thumbs up. She was a little leery of going near her, and then Bianca, or not Bianca, but Sasha double-legged her. She took down Becky. She was beating both of them up. And when Sasha left, as she was walking out, she says, "I'll see both of you on SmackDown this week." So she'll be back on TV this Friday. They went over 15 minutes in this match. I thought they were having a very good match until the run-in, and I was expecting the run-in, so I didn't mind it. I was expecting it. I figured that was probably the best thing, honestly, that they could have done to protect Bianca without her winning the championship, because Bianca really could not afford another loss. You know, after losing it in 26 seconds at SummerSlam, I would not have had her lose here on this show. But if she wasn't going to win the title, what do you do? Well, if Sasha Banks is ready to come back, get her on TV, because she was sorely missed. Putting her back in the mix on TV is going to improve things tenfold when it comes to the women's stuff on TV. So I'm very happy to have Sasha Banks back on TV. But Bianca technically won the match. She didn't win the title, but now she can say, the only reason I lost, I got screwed for the second time. I got screwed again by Sasha Banks. But now we have a three-way feud going. Of course, we don't know who might get traded to Raw. I kind of hope they all stay on SmackDown, keep this going for a while. But yes, Sasha Banks has been sorely missed. I am very happy to see her back. And we'll see where they go with it on Friday night. Very interesting that all of the horsewomen now, at this moment, are all heel. Charlotte's a heel. Bayley was a heel last we saw her. Sasha, I think, is a heel. And Becky is trying to be a heel. So all four of them, at the same time, are heel. I don't know, has that happened before? Where all four of them at the same time have been heel? I don't think so. Not since they've been called up from NXT, I don't think so. But then we got to the main event. Roman Reigns defending the Universal Championship 391 days as the champion against Finn Balor, undefeated on the main roster as the Demon. Has never been beaten before. We're going to pretend that loss to Samoa Joe in NXT never happened because WWE pretends that it never happened. In an Extreme Rules match, the only one on the entire show, over and over on commentary, as I said at the beginning of the stream, the Demon this, the Demon that. I was waiting for Michael Cole to slip up and say the Demon Kane, because they did it with him too, during that whole Demon Kane phase. Demon Kane, Demon Kane. Call him Finn Balor. You don't have to call him the Demon every 5 seconds. Sounds ridiculous. By the 15th time, it was a little silly. Roman pulled out a kendo stick early from under the ring, but when he looked up, there was Finn Balor on the other side of the ring, and he pulled out a bundle of like 4 kendo sticks. And they got in the ring, and Balor whacked him with the kendo sticks. We knew we were getting those kendo sticks. Later on, the Demon pulled the table out from under the ring and slid it inside. Roman blasted him, though, with the drive-by, got that sliding kick. And he knocked Balor headfirst into the ring post. So that looked cool. Reigns tossed him over the barricade into the crowd. They brawled over by where the kickoff set is. And Roman was threatening to put him through that glass desk they have over there. But Balor managed to avoid all of that. Back in the ring, Balor was setting up that table that he had pulled out earlier. But Roman Reigns hit him with a rock bottom. Put him right through the table. And he went for the pin, but Balor kicked out. Reigns goes for the Superman punch. Balor avoids it, hits a Pele kick. Roman comes back, ends up hitting the Superman punch anyway. Two count only. So now Reigns is setting up for a spear. And Finn Balor, on the way in for the spear, kicks him. Kicks him in the chest. Hits a sling blade. Now he's setting up for the shotgun drop kick. But when he came in for the drop kick, Roman hit the spear. And cut this guy in half. When he went for the pin, Balor got a shoulder up at 2 3/4. It's like the referee held up his count a little bit. And when he kicked out and got the shoulder up, he low-blowed Roman Reigns, which is the same way that Roman beat Balor on television a few weeks ago. When he kicked out from the coup de grace, and he got his shoulder up, and he, you know, sorry, not sorry, he low-blowed him, and then eventually he won the match. So they were playing off of that finish here. Drop kick by Balor sends Roman out to the floor. Demon hits a dive out over the top onto Roman Reigns. He throws Roman back into the ring. He hits the coup de grace. Off the top rope. Rope didn't snap. Off the top rope, he hits the double foot stomp. And all of a sudden, he has the match won. Here comes Jimmy and Jay. And the Usos reach into the ring. They drag him out of the ring. It's extreme rules, so there's no DQ. They lay some super kicks in on Balor on the floor. They set up a table on the outside. And they're going to put Finn Balor through this table. Balor fights out of it. He fights back. Sling blade on the floor to Jimmy Uso. Powerbomb to Jey Uso through the announce desk. So now both Usos have been dispatched. And all of a sudden, here comes Roman Reigns. Flying into camera frame. And he spears Balor through the barricade over by the timekeeper area. So that whole sequence was pretty cool. You know, he took out one Uso. He took out another Uso. Here comes Roman Reigns, and then boom, spears him right through the barricade. So now everybody is down, right? Balor rolls over. Now he's kind of laying in front of the announce desk. He's flat on his face, just laid out on the floor. And all of a sudden, we hear like a heartbeat sound, right? And then we see the red light. And then we hear Balor's theme music starts to play. I mean, it was red in the building like it was when The Fiend would wrestle. For a second, I thought The Fiend was coming out. I said, oh boy, if anybody knows anything about shitty finishes, unfortunately, it's The Fiend. Gives me Hell in a Cell flashbacks. But Balor is face down on the ground, and his music is playing, and his body starts twitching. And all of a sudden, he leaps up to his feet. It's like he's been given a second wind. And he jumps up to his feet. It's like he hulked up. I've talked about this recently. We don't generally see him wrestle any differently when he has the paint on than when he is just plain old Finn Balor. So at least here, this was, be careful what you wish for, I guess, right? This was something different, right? He did jump back up to his feet. We wouldn't see Finn Balor doing that. We saw the Demon. And then the Demon gives a shotgun drop kick to Reigns, who goes flying backwards. He lands on top of that table that the Usos had set up, and he goes through the table. Mind you, the light is still on. There's smoke. The music is still playing. He puts Roman Reigns back in the ring, and he heads up top for the double stomp. And he's going up, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, how are they going to get out of this? Because there's no way he's winning this championship. 391 days. The Demon is not going to be the one here in September to take the title away from Roman Reigns. But the guy just got his second win. The Usos have been taken out. How are they going to get out of this? I thought maybe Brock Lesnar was going to come out. Silly me. I mean, Brock Lesnar, he only works a certain number of days each year. So I should have known better. He's up on the top rope, and he's taking forever. And the smoke is all around. And it just looks to me like maybe he can't see through the smoke. It's like, you know, the street prophets go, we want the smoke. Well, the Demon got the smoke and he couldn't fucking see. So it's like, where is this guy, right? I'm going to come off with my move. I can't see where he is. And he's just up there and he's up there and he's taking forever and his music is still playing. And all of a sudden, we hear a snap. And the top rope breaks. The top rope breaks. And Finn Balor falls flat on his fucking face in the middle of the ring. And the music stops. And the lights come back on. And the people have no idea what just happened. And Balor is all groggy on the mat. He's looking around like he doesn't know what just happened. WWE creative is what happened. Roman Reigns then gets up. Balor gets up. Balor turns around. Guess what happens next? Roman Reigns spears the demon and he pins him 1, 2, 3. Handing the demon his first loss here on the main roster. And Roman Reigns retains his Universal Championship. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, the demon is dead. Rest in peace. The demon is dead. The aura around the demon, whatever cool factor the demon had, as soon as he fell flat on his fucking face off that top rope, they actually believed that that was a good idea for a finish to this match. Somebody sat in a room and said, you know what would be a great finish to this match here on pay-per-view? What if we have the top rope snap with one of the smallest men that we have on the main roster? I mean, he's no Drew McIntyre. He's no Bobby Lashley. He's no Omos, right? He's not a big guy. He's 180 pounds soaking wet. Maybe 190. Let's have the top rope break. Let's have him fall flat on his face and then get pinned that way. That would be a great way to finish this match. They actually thought that this was going to be a good idea. People get paid to come up with ideas like this. They actually, the direct deposit is sent to their bank account probably every other week. They are paid money. They are given perks. They are given probably stock options and a 401k and health insurance and dental and vision and all of this stuff. Because creatively, we need these people to come up with these great ideas. This was the great idea they came up with here for the finish of this match. You know, at least when Yokozuna broke the rope at SummerSlam on the kickoff show in 96 when he was wrestling Steve Austin, Yokozuna was 8,000 fucking pounds. You could believe that the rope might break if Yokozuna was scaling the ropes. The demon ain't no Yokozuna. The demon was the Shockmaster, is what he was. He had a Shockmaster moment. Only this one was planned. This was planned to go this way. The poor Shockmaster, that was not the plan. This was planned. An unfortunate way for this match to end. I was enjoying it up until the dumb finish. I have nothing positive to say about the finish of this match. It was fucking stupid. If you are trying to excuse the finish of this match, then I don't even know what to say. You are the very definition of a homer, is all I can say. You are trying way too hard to be optimistic about the finish of that match. Now, how do they explain this? They could just ignore it. They've done that before sometimes with crappy finishes. Let's just forget it ever happened and move on. We got a draft this week. Forget it. It's not a big deal. Or they can come on television and we can find out that Paul Heyman loosened the rope, or the Usos before the pay-per-view or something. I don't know. I'm trying to do their job for them now, trying to figure out how they're going to explain this. No explanation they could come up with is going to be acceptable. This was a terrible finish. So as I wrap this up here, this recap of all the matches here on this pay-per-view, I am sad. I am sad because, as I said, I thought the wrestling was largely very good on this show. And if you ask me, would I give this show a thumbs up or a thumbs down? We have a poll going in the chat right now. We have a poll on YouTube. If I voted in my own poll, would I give this show a thumbs up or a thumbs down? I would give this show a thumbs up. I would give this show a very unenthusiastic, Orange Cassidy-esque thumbs up. Because there was nothing to get excited about this show. This did not feel like a big deal. It was a show with a bunch of pretty good wrestling matches. We get a lot of really good wrestling matches on free TV every week. What differentiated Extreme Rules from all of those other shows? What was extreme about Extreme Rules? Some of the finishes, some of the things they did on this show were extremely baffling, extremely crappy. There was nothing extreme about this show. And that is the problem with Extreme Rules as a gimmick pay-per-view. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. Money in the Bank works. They're putting Money in the Bank in a stadium next year. The same stadium they were in for SummerSlam this year, that's where Money in the Bank is going next July 4th weekend. Money in the Bank is still a big deal after all these years. I have no issue with Money in the Bank being its own show, even Elimination Chamber. But stuff like Hell in a Cell, Extreme Rules, TLC, it's not necessary. Save it for when it's needed. I'm sure you could think of some other really cool-sounding name. But then again, this is the same company that's given us Braun Breaker and Von Wagner, and maybe I shouldn't be asking them to start naming pay-per-views. I think I'm going to get myself in trouble by doing that. So now it's on to Sweet Saudi Money. October 21st, that's a Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern. That is going to be the only WWE pay-per-view in the month of October is the Saudi show. Roman Reigns defends the Universal Championship against Brock Lesnar. Do they change the title in Saudi Arabia? We have seen title changes before. The Universal title has changed hands in Saudi Arabia. Think twice, right? Because when Goldberg beat The Fiend, I believe that was the Universal title. And when The Fiend beat Seth Rollins before that, that was the Universal title. So here we are again, the Universal title being defended in Saudi Arabia. Will there be a third time? I don't think so. We didn't have a title change tonight. I don't see it happening in Saudi Arabia either. I'm almost afraid to look at this Twitter poll. Let's see. Let's see what the results... That's kind of what I expected. 35% of you have voted thumbs up on this pay-per-view. 65% of you have voted thumbs down. And over in the live chat here on YouTube, we have more votes in the YouTube poll than we do on Twitter. 41% thumbs up. So only a little bit higher to 60% thumbs down. So apparently I am in the minority on this. This doesn't happen very often. This does not happen very often. I'm trying to be fair about this. Because I can't hate on a lot of the wrestling that I saw on the show tonight. I can't bring myself to do that. I just don't think that would be fair. But if you thought this show was a thumbs down, I'm not going to argue with you. I just saw a lot of apathy. That is a word that you don't want to hear that word. How do you feel about the show? Apathetic. I feel nothing. I have no feel. I am without feeling. I am numb. You end up with a bunch of fans who are numb watching your shows. That ain't good. That is not good. And I got the sense from looking in the chat and looking up and down my timeline tonight on Twitter that there were a lot of apathetic people coming out of this show tonight. So they're going to have to do better. Next month, Survivor Series is coming up. They're going to do the whole Raw versus SmackDown thing again. It's that crutch they lean on every single year. They're going to have a draft. And then we're supposed to think that everybody who was just drafted to a different show is somehow loyal to the brand that they are now on. We go through this every single year. I still don't know why they wait until October to do the draft. Moores in the chat says, keyword in apathetic is pathetic. I'll salute you for that. You make a good point. But the word pathetic is in the word apathetic. That is true. Well, let's see what you guys thought. I'm going to start checking out your super chats here. Very interested in what you guys have to say about this show tonight. I'm kind of curious to see if I am truly in the minority on this, or if people agree with me that the wrestling on this show was worth noting here. Worth giving the show a thumbs up. I don't see a lot of people giving the show a thumbs up, but let's see. Let's take a look here. We'll get some music going here in a few minutes. I just want to start on your messages here. I will read everything that you send me here. That's the way we do things. That's how we do it here on these streams. We end with a super chat party and get your feedback. Boy, we got a lot of messages here. And Nayef, thank you again, Nayef. Alsafar dropping $9.99. Ryan Spies, Chuck Taylor returning to PWG commentary is more exciting than anything that will probably happen on this show. So that came in right before the pay-per-view started. Actually, before I even get into all of these, there is one more thing before I forget that I did want to remind everybody. My Dark Side of the Ring review went up earlier today. Earlier this afternoon, Season 3 is underway. This week it was the double life of Chris Kanyon. Very sad story. Learned a few new things, actually, from it that I did not know about him before. So there's about 36 minutes long. It is up on the YouTube channel right now. If you did not see it, you will have some viewing material tomorrow. So be sure to check that out. It's up on the channel, The Double Life of Chris Kanyon. I wanted to make sure I did not forget that. Let's see here. Buzzsaw. Buzzsaw75, dropping 10 bucks. Thank you, Buzzsaw. Not looking forward to the death of the demon. It sucks that you build a character for years and snuff it out on account that they are having a match we have seen 45 times. Chris Manson, they definitely buried Lily on her way out. Hashtag AEW. That's right. I'm hearing that Lily is AEW bound. I'm hearing that Lily is All Elite. She is going to be facing Ruby Soho on Dynamite next week. Her contract is up. She has no non-compete. She just has to kind of put herself back together again. And yeah, we're going to see her on TNT very soon. Rizzo, but the good thing is that Tony Khan is going to give her complete creative control. So we'll get to see. We'll let Lily come up with her own ideas this time. Rizzo, dropping 10. Haven't watched a second of Extreme Rules, just had no interest, but still here to support the best wrestling podcaster out there. Also, love this group in the chat. Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you, Rizzo, for the kind words. Fiend for Excellence. They ruined the demon gimmick. Yes, the idea of the demon has always been a bit goofy, but they took it to the extreme tonight and killed it for me. That might have been the only thing they took to the extreme here on this show. Boots, thank you for the $2. Hulkling 93, the main event finish was like when you get a star in Super Mario but fall to your death. Boy, that happened to me a lot. Joshua Carlos, Demon Against God at Sweet Saudi Money 666. I guess God did the demon in tonight. Tarka, K-Rest, U.S. match was great. Sheamus needs more props. Women's match was hot. Well, which one? There were two of them. Well, three of them, actually. But the main event finish feels like they pissed away a great character. I said rest in peace to the demon. I will never be able to look at the demon the same way again after this. There's Boombox Brock. It's too bad we didn't get him. He could have saved the show. They would have sent Boombox Brock bebopping down to the ring at the very end. That would have actually saved the finish of that show. Quintus Brown, and some people thought that Omega Bryan finish was terrible. The Random. Who else can't wait to see Prince Devitt make his debut on AEW? Joshua Carlos, worst finish, Becky Bianca or Reigns and the Demon? Oh, Reigns and the Demon by far. The Becky Bianca finish, the only thing I'll say about that is it does suck when you have an almost 20-minute long match, or like 15, 16 minutes, and then it ends like that. I could see where people would be upset about that, but I saw it coming from a mile away, and it's a great way to introduce Sasha back onto television. So honestly, I didn't mind it because I knew we weren't getting a clean finish, and I didn't want to see Bianca lose. So I did not mind that finish as much as other people did. But I can understand after 15 minutes to have somebody run in for the DQ, obviously some people are going to be upset about that. Marty O, WWE against AEW or Vince McMahon versus pro wrestling? Chris Manson, why didn't the music just play again after he fell? Well, they should have they should have played. I wish I had it queued up here. The Price is Right fail horn. As soon as he fell down to the mat, they should have played that fucking horn. They should first the buzzer, and then the fail horn. That would have been perfect. But they didn't do it. It was a missed opportunity. Joseph Brooks, buy or sell on which tag team specialist turned single star had the better career in general? Booker T or Edge? Edge. Ryan Spy, someone get Kevin Steen out of that company and then just shut it down. There's no hope for it anymore. The Mount Vernon Kid, the Alpha, dropping an $8 super chat here. How are we supposed to believe a 190-pound Finn Balor breaks the turnbuckle? Only Vince can believe it. A croc. Rizzo, oh, that laugh. Solemn Monster is about to be taken away by men in white coats. WWE made him lose it. Remember that song I played on the podcast years ago? They're coming to take me away. Aha, they're coming to take me away. Ho, ho, hee, hee. To the funny farm. Sean Waters. You know it's going to be a fun recap with a great laugh from the Solemn Monster. Joseph Brooks, why do they treat the Universal title better than the WWE title ever since its creation? Well, because the universe trumps the world. That's all I got. I don't know. You're asking me to explain, try to pull logic out of an illogical situation. Joseph Brooks, though, thank you for the $5. Sean E. Dogs. I thought that said Sean Eats Dogs. So I was going to say, not... We're not doing any of that around here. Sean E. Dogs with the $20 super chat. People got mad at Tony Khan for saying that our product doesn't insult your intelligence. Alexa falling apart over a ripped up doll, a DQ finish, and a main event that ended in a top rope break from 190-pound Finn. Jesus fucking Christ. I just got a text message that scared the fucking shit out of me. I think it's that bug. It still has me all creeped out here. There we go. All right. Leave me alone. Who is texting me at 12:30 in the morning? Jesus Christ. Vitamin Vision TV. I accidentally unsubscribed and then resubscribed, and now I can't use the chat for 4 weeks. Anyways, the ending was blank. I'm sorry about that, Vitamin Vision. We have the subscribers-only mode turned on in the chat. It's a necessary evil, but give it a few weeks and you'll be able to chime in again with everybody else. Matthew, had more fun watching the paint dry on my walls instead of this show. Joseph again, buy or sell, which was worse? Goldberg not going over at SummerSlam 2003... or The Fiend not going over at Hell in a Cell in 2019. The Fiend. That was far worse. Actually, the match and the finish of that match in a Hell in a Cell match, everything about that match was an insult to the intelligence of every single person who watched that show. At least the Elimination Chamber at SummerSlam, as I remember, was actually a pretty good match before Goldberg got hit in the head with a sledgehammer. So what they did 2 years ago was worse. GSC in the chat says the bug wants out. That's what I'm worried about. This thing was fucking gigantic. I mean, like a tank with legs. Freaks me out. Bret Hart. I was bored, so I decided to put on Extreme Rules, and the first thing I saw was Alexa Bliss crying over her destroyed doll. I played video games instead. I think you had the right idea. Ali Nadeem, finishes like that are why I prefer title hotshotting Rock Triple H style over these super long reigns. Grant Johnson, thank you for the 10 spot. Have to say Street Profits against the Usos is the best tag team match of the year. And P1 plus others versus New Day, I could watch all day. Should have turned it off after those two matches. Yeah, the opening six-man was excellent. In fact, I'm trying to think if that might have been actually the best match on the entire show. It might have been. If the opener wasn't the best, it was one of the top two best matches of the night. I enjoyed that match a lot. Colin C., what do you think will be the format for the Owen Hart tournament? 16, 32, or G1 format? That is a very good question. Dude, I don't remember. Did they refer to it as a round robin in the press release? I don't think they did. So we don't have all the details yet, but if I had to take a guess, I would guess probably 16 or 32 man style would be my guess. Chris Quillman, a lot of botches tonight and a terrible ending. However, for a split second, I did think Balor was going to win. WWE and Peacock deserve each other. Joshua Carlos, good matches, just awful finishes that hurt them. James Cousins, it's almost like God interfered to stop the demon going over. Thank you, God. Are you saying that God is not a fan of the demon? Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Vitamin Vision, the demon has now joined the fiend in, in WWE gimmick heaven or hell. EJ Slemp, would you like to see a Dark Side of the Ring episode on Crush next season? I think his story would be interesting to tell. Brian Adams, yeah, I think that would be interesting. Got in trouble with the law there at one point. I think it was a weapons charge. I think that would probably be an interesting story. Kona Crush. Shaka Bra. Remember Shaka Bra? Cack Burlington, Solomonster, I can't believe Peacock is now cutting away from wrestlers' entrances to the ring to show advertisements. WWE must drop the cock. DHV Smoking Trees, Michael Cole calling kickouts before they happen is infuriating. He is doing it more and more. Well, it's because it's in the script in front of him. And he's looking down at his script and he's reading the spots before they actually happen on TV. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what was going on. Paul Hamilton, again, thank you, man, for the $150. Paul knocked it out of the park, man. No language glitches or collapsing ropes. Just some sweet Saudi money from the Portland pop star. Thank you, brother. TH Revolution with a $10 super chat. And again, hit that like button if you are late to the stream. It helps the video out a lot. I didn't mention it before, but do hit that thumbs up. As someone in the crowd for the show tonight, we did not get any of the build for the six-man tag. Show overall felt like an ad for Raw and SmackDown. Crowd hated every time that Big E and Lashley ad came up. Juan Bermudez. I caught the pay-per-view late because I was cooking lasagna and caught the Charlotte Bliss match. Pretty good, but stopped watching the show during the three-way. Supratik Boxy. Dropping some super chat love. As per you, what is it that Omos, Braun, or any other big men of today are missing that none of them are over compared to 7-foot guys of past like Andre, Taker, Kane, or even Big Show? Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with just the fact that times have changed. I think people are more accepting now of smaller guys going out there and just working technically great matches. And back when Andre was first coming up and, you know, some of the other big guys of that era, the focus really wasn't so much on, I mean, if we're talking WWE, the focus was not really so much on work rate. It was more about freak show attractions and big guys, larger than life looking people. And it's just a different, the wrestling business is just different now. And it's more, you know, dominated by people who don't look like that. And I also think that because of that, when you have a big guy who comes along, the perception is, oh, they can't work. Oh, they can't wrestle. Oh, they only know 5 moves. Well, someone like Omos, I mean, how many moves do you expect him to know? You know, I mean, if he could do those 5 moves really, really well and carry himself like a star, then he'll be a star. But it's just a different time. It's a different era now. And also, I think when Andre was coming up, you didn't really see anybody who looked like him. And now, not that you would find a lot of people who look like Andre the Giant, but I don't know. You look at the NBA and stuff and other sports leagues. I mean, you see plenty of people who are 7 feet tall, 7'2", 7'4". I don't know. It just feels to me like it's not as unique or as special as it would have been 30 years ago to see that. And then there's another important part of it also, which is the booking. And someone like Andre would have been protected a great deal. You didn't see him on TV every week. Now you have weekly television. So you see these people on television every single week. And if you have a company that creatively doesn't know what the fuck they're doing half the time, unfortunately, it's going to work against the talent. It's not the talent's fault. But look at some of the writing and look at some of the stuff we see on TV today. Is it any wonder why some of these people don't get over? Does it really surprise you that much? It doesn't surprise me. It's sad, but that's the way I see it. A. Lavelle, what's up, Solomonster? Hope you are doing well. Was at the show tonight and had a great time. Thank you, Dan, Claire, Tony, and Mike, for a great time in Columbus, and keep up the great work. So we've had two reports so far, one from someone who did not seem overly enthusiastic about being at the show tonight, and then A. Lavelle, who had a blast. So, again, different strokes. People are going to have different opinions about what they see. Ryan Spies, I'm assuming that you are hoping for USA to leave YouTube TV so you have an excuse to not watch Monday Night Raw. I wish, but I have to watch Raw. I have to watch Raw. And so naturally, this dispute would be happening at a time when next Monday is the draft night episode of Raw, which I was thinking about going live when it was over. And now I might not even have USA Network next week, so... hopefully they get this dispute solved. It's not just USA that we would be losing. I mean, it's a whole bunch of different channels. They were, you know, listing them all online. And it's always the customers who get fucked in these disputes. I have no sympathy for any of these people. You're talking about NBC Universal and Google. Billions and billions and billions of dollars. I have no sympathy for either one of them. As the customer, my message to them is very simple. Fix this. Get off your fucking ass and fix this. This is becoming a repetitive thing with YouTube TV. It kills me because I love the service. I've been very happy with YouTube TV. But if they drop NBC and USA and all these channels, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'll have to pay for that and pay for another service until this gets resolved. I'll have to figure something out. Tyson Neblett, great job. I hope make the best of worst. What? Let me try this again. Great job, the video. I hope make the best of worst top 10 WWE pay-per-view endings. Okay, I think I know what he's trying to say. Maybe his keyboard was on the fritz. Tyson, thank you for the $5. He's interested in me doing a top 10 worst WWE pay-per-view endings. It's an idea. I know a few of them already off the top of my head that would be on that list. Patrick, you made my Echo go off about 3 times during the Alexa Charlotte recap. Alexa, shut up. Well, I'd rather it be Alexa than Siri, because every time I mention Siri, my phone goes off. So I have to be careful. King Bling Blah. I would be furious if I paid for a ticket for Extreme Rules and got not so Extreme Rules. I feel bad for the live attendance. So glad we have AEW. C Entertainment Media with the $5. Let me just turn on some music for you guys here. Get some music going as I continue to read all of your super chats. And again, please, if you haven't already done so, hit that like button because it does help the video out in the recommendeds on YouTube. So be sure to go ahead and do that. But C Entertainment Media, Charlotte's promo afterwards, along the lines of she faced the old Alexa and that she destroyed the doll to remind Alexa that she is still a champion at heart. Look, I am sure that they will come up with some kind of explanation. It's all part of the story. I understand that. I understand it's all part of the story and it's going to go somewhere. And what I'm telling you is, what we saw in that segment in a vacuum tonight, as I sat here watching this, was embarrassing. And no explanation on television this week is going to change my mind about what I thought about the segment tonight. I am critiquing and reviewing what I am seeing. I understand that this is going to be an ongoing storyline. I'm kind of hopeful that we've seen the last of the doll, but I'm pretty sure we haven't. Because WWE has been selling a shit ton of dolls. So we're going to keep seeing more and more dolls, because they keep selling out. So I'm sure this is not the end of Lily. And if it is the end of Lily, then they'll have a new doll called Mary. And if Mary dies, it'll be Esther or Edith or something like that. We don't have too many Esthers and Ediths anymore. You notice that? In today's day and age, nobody names their daughter Esther. Nobody names their daughter Edith. You think of those names, you think of some 80-year-old woman in a wheelchair somewhere. I think we need to bring back those names. If I ever have a daughter, I'm going to name her Edith. That's what I'm going to do. If I ever have a son, I'm going to name him Slapjack. TH Revolution, I did try to start a thank you Charlotte chant when Charlotte destroyed the doll. The crowd did not go for it. Hulkling 93, with all of the four horsewomen as heels, there is a possibility of a millionaires club like Stable, but the idea could fall flat like it did in WCW. Well, to do that, I think you need them all on the same brand, and I don't see that happening. DH Smoking Trees, that was the same corner that Sheamus was Jeff Hardying on. Maybe it was his fault the buckle broke. That's a good point. That is a good point. That is the same corner that Sheamus was doing the, you know, he was doing the Jeff Hardy. In that corner, you're right. I didn't even realize that. You may be onto something here. Zangsu 102. Bring back Unforgiven or Vengeance. Cell Dweller Fangirl. Thank you, Sasha, Chance, when Sasha interfered. I did hear that, actually. Mr. Block Ice, 22. Take the name Extreme Rules name from a pay-per-view. I didn't see it, but I saw a good game from my 49ers taking an L from the Packers. Is the pay-per-view worth seeing? Well, look. if you already have a WWE Network subscription, then I would just check out a handful of matches on the show because the wrestling was good. Go into the show with very low expectations. And if you have nothing better to do, you'll get a few good wrestling matches. It's not the worst way to spend the night. That would be my advice. Rob Reed, I thumbs downed due to the booking. Matches were at least decent. Finishes in the second half of the show just killed it. Yeah, it was very, the back end of this show, when you consider the Charlotte Alexa stuff, when you consider the fact that they did do a DQ finish, and again, I didn't mind it personally, but one right after the other like that, to do all of those finishes right up until the main event, was not the way to close out that show. I think that's where, honestly, a lot of the thumbs down that we're seeing, that's really where a lot of them are coming from. Probably were those last few matches and the way they handled those finishes. Just killed it for a lot of people. X-Monster Inks. Was Roman beating Finn Balor, Roman defeating his demons by destroying the rope with his mind? I couldn't figure out why the ropes broke. Brother, you're gonna drive yourself nuts trying to figure it out. There is no logical explanation for it other than somebody loosened the rope to help Roman Reigns. And they may not even go that far to explain it. They might just move on. It is best to not even give this a second thought. Because you will just waste your time and drive yourself crazy trying to figure out why they do the things that they do. Eric Decker. My friend went to the show and said that he said the rope spot was quick. He said the crowd didn't know how to react. I call it the Columbus screw job. Clag Daddy, Hardy Monster Super Chat coming soon. Should I? I might have to clip that one. I might have to. DHV Smoking Trees, did you catch Charlotte wearing AEW colors? I thought her gear was very unique. the gear that she wore tonight. Again, a little bit of Venom there. Hey, Amiibo, have yourself a good night. Royal World, the demon against the ring crew at WrestleMania. Book it now. Well, you may as well just have them, you know, curtain jerk and open the show then. King Bling Blah. And WWE wonders why ratings are going down. Rob Reed, right after they have that finish tonight, they go to Seth Rollins talking about wanting to kill Vince McMahon after Hell in a Cell. I have not watched the Broken Skull Sessions yet, but I did hear that. I did hear that Seth Rollins wanted to, I believe in his words, strangle Vince McMahon after that Hell in a Cell match with The Fiend 2 years ago. So, Seth Rollins felt the same way, apparently, that all of us did. DiLorenzo, hey, Solomon, sir, I was walking home when I played this stream. That laugh was really weird to walk home to, but can we get a quick Bruce Hart impression? A Bruce Hart impression? I don't think I've ever done a Bruce Hart impression. I don't think I can do it. Because I got stew on the brain. I'd almost be doing like a Stew Hart impression.
Yeah, I know those guys. I used to stretch them in the dungeon. Yeah.
That's the best I can do. That's my Stew Hart impression. I could do my Jimmy Snuka impression.
Brother. What year is it, brother? Brother. She wouldn't wake up, brother. I swear, she wouldn't wake up, brother.
Jamin John, looking back, 2003 Raw, aka the Triple H show, started pretty strong with the Hollywood Rock Hurricane segments, but falls off the rails with the Reign of Terror. HBK C83, who would you line up as challengers for Big E, assuming he stays on Raw? One name I recommended on my podcast today was moving Kevin Owens over to Raw and turning him heel. Bring back vicious heel Kevin Owens and give him a run on top with Big E. So that would be one suggestion I would have. But a lot of it really just depends on how the draft shakes out this week. There's still more to do with him and Bobby Lashley. They may blow it off on TV tomorrow night, but there's still more to do, I think, with the two of them. Paul Heyman. Should Becky Lynch start using the mandible claw? Ah, jeez. It's a very astute observation from Paul Heyman. No. That is a move that is reserved for Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Christian, God put over Roman Reigns. Did you watch the Rollins Broken Skull episode? Seth came off pretty good, actually. I've not watched it yet. I will watch it tomorrow. Ant Ran in the chat has a new gimmick for Seth Rollins. Seth the Strangler. I like that. He walks around with gloves on and a piece of piano wire. I could get behind that. He's already got the creepy, annoying laugh down. EJ Slemp, I watched the Jaguars game today, and damn, they are bad. Do you think Tony Khan puts more effort into AEW than he does with the Jaguars and Fulham? Apparently, I know there's a lot of Fulham fans who are not happy with Tony Khan and wish he would abandon ship and, you know, leave the team. But, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Jaguars. I'm not, like, a huge Giants fan. My brother is, though. And, yeah, the Giants obviously have not started the season very well. They had that heartbreaking loss last week, right at the very end on a field goal. And then it happened all over again today. So you think the Jags are bad? You got to check out the Giants. Spanish Goddess, what is your favorite wrestling autograph in your collection, if you have any? I have tons of autographs. I stopped collecting them years ago. To me, it was always cooler to get a photo with someone. Now I'm more like a photo guy than an autograph guy. But I have a ton of autographs. I have Bret Hart. I have his autograph. In fact, I have his autograph twice. I had him sign, because he was here at Caroline's on Broadway in New York City many years ago. So I met him, and then I had an old WWF, they used to do this magazine called Spotlight Magazine, and he was on the cover. And it had like a red cover. He had the WWF belt over his shoulder, the winged eagle. I have that magazine. I had him sign the magazine, and I have it framed. in another room. And then somebody, Keith, it was Keith Hart, he's listening, shout out to Keith, got me a very nice gift a few years ago. I guess they made this a special edition Bret Hart 1993 King of the Ring action figure. And King of the Ring 93 is one of my favorite pay-per-views. And he saw Bret at some kind of convention. He had Bret sign the box with the figure in it. And he signed it in pink Sharpie and said King of the Ring 93. And I have that up in my closet somewhere. So those probably are two of the best ones I've got, honestly. I wouldn't give those away for anything. I have a Ric Flair autographed WWF magazine cover, the first magazine cover he ever did for them. He's sitting in that Hollywood director's chair. That's from 92. I have him. I have his signature on the cover. I have Vince McMahon's signature. I had Vince McMahon sign his name for me when I met him and got my picture with him at the first Fan Fest in 1994 at Madison Square Garden. So I guess that trumps all the other autographs that I have. I have Vince's autograph in blue ink on a piece of paper, so I'll bet you don't have Vince McMahon's autograph, but I do. Devin from New York, or from New Jersey, I'm sorry. Devin from New Jersey, 2000. If Brother Monster ever comes on, his entrance music should be Yo Little Brother, by Nolan Thomas. I see what you've done there. It's a great song. Spider Sense, Sweet Saudi Money 6, Turning Tricks. That was one of these suggestions. We have settled on Sweet Saudi Money 6, Enough of This. That is going to be the official name of this year's pay-per-view. King Bling Blah, why doesn't AEW run commercials on Raw and SmackDown? I've seen some AEW commercials in the past during Raw and SmackDown, so they have done it before. And I think at some point you'll probably see them again when they have something to promote. Maybe the Owen Hart tournament. They'll promote it on Raw and SmackDown. Savon Watson. Is that who I think it is? I think that's Food Hive. With draft coming up, who are five superstars who can very much benefit from a brand change? Well, you need to go listen to episode 723 of the podcast, because I named a lot more than five people. So if you want your answer, you got to go listen to the podcast today. Your boy Ed. Look at this. Your boy Ed just dropped $5. Hey, Solomon Monster. Roman's run through most of everyone on SmackDown. Who do you see possibly getting the rub from taking the title off of Roman? Getting the rub. It's an interesting way of putting it. So who would benefit the most by being the one to take the championship from Roman Reigns? As I look at the current roster, main roster, I'm not counting any NXT folks. I look at SmackDown, it's not going to be Balor. It's not going to be Nakamura. I don't think it's going to be Kevin Owens. They could always go back to Owens. I don't see that happening. Brock Lesnar doesn't gain anything from it. You know, honestly, one of the moves I suggested in the draft is to move Drew McIntyre over to SmackDown. I think Drew McIntyre, it would be a big deal for him if he was the one to take the championship from Roman Reigns. I don't know that he needs it. He's already been WWE champion before. But I think he would certainly benefit from something like that. I think Damian Priest. And I don't think Damian Priest is ready for that yet. But could Damian Priest be somebody who, if Roman is still the champion in 6 months, and if they found themselves on the same brand, could he benefit from that? Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're all in on him. I think Keith Lee is somebody who, if they actually believed in him and they got behind him, someone like Keith Lee, Keith Bearcat Lee, maybe he could be that person. You know, he's been in the ring with Roman Reigns before. Well, they may have been partners at that time. But those are some names that immediately spring to mind. Of course, we could expand that to NXT. We could say, boy, you know, Rex Steiner, at some point, maybe he's that guy. Maybe Odyssey Jones. But those guys are years away from being ready for something like that. Roman Reigns is not going to hold the championship for another 2 or 3 years. Somebody is going to have to beat him for it. Who they're going to choose, I have no idea. Jesse Cam, my brother and I went to the go-home SmackDown. By the end, we were both disappointed. The show felt like filler. Montez Ford was awesome in the ring, but cut the same promo twice. It's one of my biggest gripes with a lot of these WWE shows is a lot of them feel like filler. 3 hours on Monday, I mean, that's all they're trying to do every week is just fill time. And you don't want it to feel that way. You don't want it to feel like filler. You want it. You want to turn around and be like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, the show's almost over. The show is just breezed by. It's like the opposite of that every week. Now they've been giving away some big matches on Raw, but as I said on the podcast, they're going to burn through all their big matches. It is not the same thing. You know, AEW, people say, oh, what about AEW? Well, the big difference is that AEW has 4 pay-per-views a year. WWE has 12. So AEW, with all the talent they've brought in now and all the potential dream matches they could put together, there's no way they could possibly put all of them and headline with them on pay-per-view because they only have 4 pay-per-views a year. So you're going to see more of those matches on television. But WWE has a pay-per-view every single month, and they are giving away these matches like candy. They gave away that triple threat match on Raw Monday night without even telling people in advance it was even going to be taking place. Now they're giving away a WWE title match at the beginning of Raw tomorrow night. They're trying to keep people from, I guess, tuning into Monday Night Football, but we go through this every year. I'm not saying they should just give up, but, you know, it's they're going to get hammered every year with football. It's the same thing every single year we go through this. Navy 4181. What did you think of the beatdown on Piper by Rick Rude on Brother Love Show, plus Jesse Ventura's commentary? How come you ain't laughing, McMahon? You know, it's been so long since I've seen that segment, so honestly, I can't really tell you. I don't remember much about that particular segment. I remember more about, like, when Rick Martel blinded Jake with the arrogance on the show, and Hogan being cuffed to a guardrail and beaten down with a billy club by Big Boss Man and squashed by Earthquake. You know, Undertaker getting his the casket lid slammed on his hand by Jake, and then dragging the casket. I remember a lot of that stuff. That one, I don't really remember that segment as much. Grant Johnson, thank you for the 10 spot, man, Grant. I appreciate it. How much would you pay for a Fatal 5-Way? AJ Styles, Finn Balor, Bryan Danielson, Kenny Omega, and Rob Van Dam. One match, elimination match, 150 minutes. He says, I would give $120. I would definitely not give $120. I really don't want to see that match. I'm more of a singles match guy. Maybe a 3-way. You start getting into 4-ways and 5-ways and 6-ways, scramble matches, like, you can't even keep up with what's going on. I'd much rather you divide those guys up and have a little round robin type, like G1 thing with everybody you just mentioned. That's more my style. I'd pay for that. I wouldn't pay $120 though. I might pay $20, but I would not pay probably any more than that. Paul Heyman, can John Morrison benefit from an NXT run? I don't see how he fits in. NXT now is developmental. They have their veterans there. They have the Johnny Garganos and the Tommaso Ciampas. They're not going to bring in a 40-year-old guy to NXT. What is gained by doing that if the focus isn't going to be on him? If the focus is on him putting other people over, then I don't see how it benefits John Morrison. What might benefit John Morrison is getting Frankie Monet on the main roster and putting her together with her husband. Putting them together as a combo, like Scarlett and Karrion Kross, who inexplicably are not together on the main roster. John Morrison and Frankie Monet together on TV, I think that could be a winning combo. Abdul Rahman, what's next for Lashley, assuming he will be losing to Big E tomorrow night? I'm very curious if they're going to move him over to SmackDown. He's been losing so much, and he's probably going to lose again tomorrow night. And if he's losing that much, that, to me, that screams moving to SmackDown. Same thing with Drew McIntyre. I feel like he's moving to SmackDown. He's lost quite a few matches lately. I would move Drew. I would not move Lashley. If Lashley loses and does not move to SmackDown, You know, honestly, the best thing to do, I would like to see them reform the Hurt Business. And at some point, push him back and elevate him back into that main event picture, but he would have to take a back seat for a while. I don't know how long MVP is going to be gone for. He had surgery on his knee. I would like to see them give the Hurt Business another shot. HBKC83, who do you associate with the Winged Eagle belt more? Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, or Shawn Michaels? Hogan. Hogan and Bret. For me, it's Hogan and Bret. Savon Watson, I'm not Food Hive, but shout out to him and everyone in the chat. All right, I got confused. For some reason, I thought it was Food Hive. But if it was Food Hive, he would have announced himself as Food Hive. I have not heard from Food Hive. I hope that he is doing well. Very unlike him not to be part of the party here on these streams. Cell Dweller Fangirl with the 5. Not having a face ready to beat Roman is WWE's fault for pushing the same people and burying their younger talent to Oldberg. I agree. They've done a very poor job, and now the chickens are coming home to roost, which is why they're all of a sudden we have NXT 2.0, and we have all these new guys being put on TV at the same time. We got Bron Breakker, you know, you bitch asses. And we got Tony D'Angelo, what's going on? You know, everybody's got to have a gimmick. Everybody's got to have a character. We have all these new guys who are now popping up on TV, and they're racing to create the next big star. They wouldn't have to race if they had already done a good job of creating 3 or 4 or 5 viable top young stars. Damian Priest, he's not that young, but Damian Priest could be someone who, you know, could be a main event player in this company. The well runs pretty dry after that. And you're right, that's a problem of their own doing. There's nobody to blame for that but WWE and Vince McMahon. It's their own damn fault. And they're struggling now because of it. At the top of the card, they are struggling because of it. EJ Slemp. Do you think all of the AEW quarterly special supercards on TNT should have a set name like TakeOver, Clash of the Champions, or Saturday Night's Main Event? I'd like to see that. Yeah, I think that would be cool. And last but not least, I think we've all caught up. King of Doug style, have a good night or good morning, I guess. It says 6:30 a.m. where he is. Oh, no, he's saying 6:30. Okay, he's saying 6:30 comes early. I thought it was 6:30 where you are now. I'm like, where the fuck are you? I thought you were here. I thought you were in this country. DJ or DHB Smoke and Trees, a dirt sheet guy on the K100 podcast said that Samoa Joe is not hurt. Could WWE have secret plans? He would be my pick to beat Roman as the outcast Samoan. Samoa Joe is not beating Roman Reigns. Samoa Joe is not beating Roman Reigns. And I said I found it very suspect that Samoa Joe vacated the championship due to some kind of nebulous medical reason that was not revealed to us right before they were rebooting the entire brand. So I don't know if they have a source or not with Samoa Joe who would know, but that was kind of the thought that I had. So, Mr. Montana, thank you for becoming a channel member. Welcome to the family. He is a sound-off superstar. Which means you now have access to that hour-long Q&A that I did for members only a little under a week ago. So there's some content you can go back and check out tomorrow. And we're going to be doing another Q&A in the next few days. I'll put up a post just for channel members under the community section on YouTube for people to leave questions. And I will try to pull as many of them as I can, and we'll do another video hopefully later this week. So for all you channel members out there, that's for all tiers. We'll be doing more of those going forward. Paul Heyman in the chat says, K100 isn't that Disco's podcast. Well, there you go. There you go. Enough said. We can move on. You said it all right there. Nothing more needs to be said. Grant Johnson with the $5. Thank you, Solomon, sir. Love. Thank you, Grant. Thank you for staying up late with me. It's 1 o'clock in the morning here on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast. I guess what would that be? 10 p.m.? It's not that late where you are. Oh, my goodness. So we got all your super chats all read. I promised. As promised. I got through them all. But just to wrap this up with a nice bow, if you are wondering, is this pay-per-view worth watching? If you have a network subscription and you want to watch some good wrestling, you will find good wrestling on this show. If you did not see this show, you do not have to go out of your way to watch it. There were no matches on this show that were outstanding matches that are going to be in the conversation when this year is over. Oh my God, did you see that match at Extreme Rules? There was nothing like that on this show. But there was a lot of solid work in the ring. WWE really screwed the pooch on some of the finishes to these matches and the post-match stuff. And that main event finish, whatever, however they explained that away on TV, was fucking dreadful. And, you know, we joke about the demon and all that, but, you know, when I say rest in peace, demon, that's how I feel. You know, the demon character used to be cool. There was a cool factor when he was in NXT. And I never really felt that same way with him on the main roster. And I certainly did not feel that way about him tonight. In fact, tonight he came off as uncool as I have ever seen him with that paint on his body. And them doing that finish was absolutely ridiculous. It was shameful. And it certainly didn't do him any favors. Because when my initial reaction is to laugh at the finish of your match and the finish of your pay-per-view, you have not done a very good job. Because that was your main event with your top star for your top championship in the company. And my only reaction when it was over was laughter. I'm not watching Saturday Night Live. Although I haven't really laughed at that show in years anyway. But I'm not watching a stand-up comedy special. I want to watch stand-up comedy. I'll go watch someone. I'll go watch, you know, Kevin Hart. Or I'll go watch an old George Carlin special. Or Richard Pryor or someone like that. That's not why I watch Extreme Rules. WWE, you know, when we talk about building up goodwill with your audience, that's one thing I will give AEW and Tony Khan a lot of credit for. They have done a very good job. They know their audience well. And they have done a very good job of building up goodwill with their audience. I think, generally speaking, their fans trust that when a big match comes or when a big event is over, they're not going to be left upset or, you know, feeling as though they were somehow screwed. And you don't really generally have that feeling, right? Some shows are better than others. You might say, all right, that kind of fell flat or whatever. But I never feel like they go out of their way to insult their audience and treat us like we're just a bunch of children. I never feel that way. WWE has a habit of doing that a lot. And they did that tonight at the end of that main event. So that's the reason why when I look in the chat right now at the poll we have going, it's 40% thumbs up and 60% thumbs down. That's why we have that lopsided, you know, thumbs down percentage. And when I check the Twitter poll, that's why it's 65% thumbs down. This is a thumbs down pay-per-view, according to all of you. Mario DeRose, what was a worst era? Or a worse era, the Thunderdome era, WWE, or 1995 WWF with all those awesome gimmicks with wrestlers having a day job. Nothing is worse than the pandemic era. Wrestling in front of no fans, even virtual fans, is there's no way to spin that positively. If you're going to compare that to any other era that has people in their seats in the building, I'm never going to vote for the Thunderdome era. Because that was a terrible time. If you were watching wrestling, it was a terrible time to watch those WWE shows and look out and know that there's nobody in the building and that, you know, Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard and Kevin Dunn are manufacturing reactions. And they're making the decision about who's over and who's not, who's being cheered and piping in cheers and who's being booed and piping in boos. That will always be the worst era. I will take T.L. Hopper and Duke the Dumpster Drozzi and the Goon and You know, Aldo Montoya with the fucking jockstrap on his face. You know, the athletic supporter on his face. And Isaac Yankem DDS, the dentist, the evil dentist. I'll take all of that shit. Because there was some good shit mixed in there, too. We had, you know, Brett and Owen and Hakushi. And, you know, there were some talented people on that roster in 95. Shawn Michaels. So the pandemic era gets my vote. As far as wrestling is concerned, wrestling is meant to be taking place in front of actual human beings, not in front of an empty building. Cell Dweller Fangirl out of the WWE female roster, who will go to AEW next? Charlotte or Sasha is her choice. Vince would throw money to keep the four horsewomen together, though. I don't know that any of them are going to go. I mean, obviously Charlotte, her fiancé is there. She has friends who work there. Charlotte Flair has absolutely no reason to leave WWE. Even though she was just feuding with someone over a fucking doll. Charlotte Flair is a made woman. You know, she calls herself the queen, and that's how she's treated on TV. Why would she leave? She probably gets paid very well. She's pushed over every single other fucking person in that division. She's going to end up winning 20 championships. She'll probably headline another WrestleMania before all is said and done. She has no reason to leave. Sasha Banks, I think you asked me about the horsewomen specifically. I would say Sasha Banks. I think there's a better chance we eventually see Sasha Banks in AEW than probably any of the other horsewomen. Because Becky's not going anywhere. Becky is not going anywhere. And Abdul Rahman, what went wrong with Curtis Axel? Did he not have it? Well, it depends. I mean, how do you define it? What is it? Curtis Axel was done in by the stupid names that he was given. Michael McGillicuddy. I know Curtis Axel was kind of combining his grandfather's name with, you know, his father's name with his grandfather's nickname. And, you know, the dumb names did not help. But Curtis Axel never had the charisma, even his father, that his father had. You know what, I would say, and I'm not trying to insult the guy, I think he was he was a decent enough wrestler, but he felt like he was missing something, and I don't know that he had it. You know, when you think of that in terms of like a top guy, I never saw him that way. Same thing with Ted DiBiase Jr., just part of the reason why he never succeeded, and he never really went anywhere in the company. He had the name, he had the background, second generation, or in his case, I guess third generation, but some guys have it and some guys don't. I don't really know that Curtis Axel ever had it. Could he have gone farther than he did? Yeah, he could have gone farther. But, you know, the way they change these guys' names and everything, especially when, you know, they have that wrestling background and they're so-and-so's son or whatever. You know, for them, it's all about owning them. They want to own people. They want to own the name. But then they give them these crap-ass names. And you'd be surprised, you know, having a terrible name or a terrible nickname, you know, how badly that could damage somebody. It didn't do them any favors. And EJ Slemp, last question, is it too early to do Punk against Andrade or Punk against Pac? Don't think it's too early to do Punk and Pac. Punk and Andrade, I think Andrade needs to win some more matches. It's amazing to think some of these people that have already come into the company, like an Adam Cole or a Malakai Black, I don't believe have been around. I don't think Malakai's been around as long as Andrade. They all have more matches in AEW than Andrade has. I don't know if it's a travel issue. I have no idea. But we really haven't seen a whole hell of a lot from Andrade in AEW. He needs to have some more wins under his belt before he loses. Because if he goes in there with Punk, he ain't coming out on the winning end of that. Nor should he. Axelmania was a fun gimmick. Yeah, I mean, Axelmania was a fun gimmick. It was a fucking comedy gimmick. He was a clown. I mean, is that as high as his ceiling was for him to be a clown on TV? It's funny, but if Curtis Axel was still around today, he'd be chasing R-Truth around in Tozawa for the 24/7 title. That's what they would be doing with him. That's right. They wanted Mick Foley to be Mason the Mutilator. They've always had a very spotty record when it comes to names. In any event, this has been fun. I'm glad that you guys hung out with me here on this Extreme Rules recap, not so Extreme Rules recap. My Twitter handle is on your screen right now, at Solomonster. Follow me on there if you're not already following, and go vote in the Twitter poll, which right now is very lopsided, in favor of thumbs down. This is a thumbs down pay-per-view, according to all of you. You were actually, I was kinder to it than you were, I feel like. As much as I ranted on a few things, I was actually a lot nicer about this show than a lot of you were. Check out my Dark Side of the Ring review, The Double Life of Chris Kanyon, a very sad, tragic story with some interesting little tidbits of information that was not included in the episode. I talk about a lot of stuff that they did not cover on Dark Side of the Ring. It's over 30 minutes long. It's up on YouTube right now, so be sure to go ahead and check that out, as well as episode 723, 2 hours of the podcast, the full podcast, dropped earlier today. So I will hope that you check that out on Spotify, check that out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you usually get your podcast from. And I think that's about it. I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to cover here. So be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic week. Thank you to all of our new channel members again. I thank you all. No, we're not doing the WrestleMania main event tonight. We save that for the AEW streams. We do the Be the Booker. It's a little segment we do at the end of those shows, and we randomly use a random generator to pick out the WrestleMania main event. Boy, I had a doozy the other night. Mojo Rawley versus Sting as a WrestleMania main event. And then the week before that, I had picked Kevin Nash, one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura. I've picked some doozies. I've picked some very interesting matches. So we'll do that. We'll get back to that again on the Dynamite stream on Wednesday night. So come on back then, and we'll pick the WrestleMania main event. All right, I'm out of here. Have yourselves a good night, and I'll see you guys on Wednesday after Dynamite. Take care, guys.